Well, Jesus' closest followers come to him with what seems to be a very reasonable request that a group of disciples would make to their rabbi. Increase our faith. Maybe they were expecting Jesus to say, hey, I got a 5-point plan to increase your faith. Just do this, 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 and this, and your faith will grow. Then, of course, he would make the pitch for money. Right? But he doesn't do that. When they say increase our faith, he presents them with an absurd metaphor. He said, if you had even faith the size of the tiniest little seed, you could say to a mulberry tree, be planted in the sea, and it would do it. Who's ever heard of a mulberry tree being planted in the sea? What point would there be to that other than that it would be pretty sensational to watch? It would be on the 6 o'clock news on all the stations, right? So why would Jesus respond that way? Doesn't make any sense. Unless you remember that his disciples are pretty enamored with the sensational. They have been arguing about who's going to be greatest when Jesus overthrows the Romans and sets up a new reign like that of David, and who's going to hold this office and who's going to hold that office. If they had a little faith, they're likely to waste it doing crazy, sensational things, trying to impress people, trying to make this movement he started a much bigger deal in the public eye than he wanted to make it, at least at that point. Is Jesus chiding his disciples for wanting more faith? That seems a bit odd, doesn't it? Then, however, he tells them a story. And this story is classic bait and switch. And he pulls it off beautifully, as Jesus is wont to do with these stories. He says, which one of you, having a slave... I wonder which one of his apostles has a slave, if any of them have slaves. Is he just saying, if someone had a slave, but he says, which one of you, putting them in the master role? From the very beginning of the story, hey, this is going to be a good story because I got the lead role. I'm the master here. Which one of you, having a slave who's worked all day in the fields, would come in, have that slave sit at table and say to them, I'll fix dinner tonight. You just take it easy. Nobody. They know the answer to this, whether they own slaves or not. They are familiar enough with the households of masters and slaves that they know that there is not a master in the world who is going to have the slave sit and the master is going to serve them. Except, of course, for one. But we only learn that much later. He says, no. When the master sits, the slave will serve the master. And the slave will eat later. And when everything is done that can be done, you slaves will say, wait a minute, wait just a minute. I was a master when this story started. What am I doing being a slave now? That's the switch. You say, I can't take any credit. I was just doing what I was supposed to do. Interesting. I wonder if Jesus is actually doing what they asked him to do. I wonder if just doing what you're supposed to do is what increases your faith. How interesting. Yesterday, I was over in East Nashville, yesterday morning, at Tulip Street United Methodist Church. Tulip Street has a great long history. Some of you know that when the tornado came through a few years ago, it took out a part of that building. They replaced and redid the windows, the beautiful stained glass windows there, and it's about to close. This coming Sunday, they're going to have a homecoming, inviting people back to celebrate that long ministry, but also to get one last worship service in, one last view of those windows, one last religious gathering before it ceases to be a place of worship. I was there to help with a memorial service for the Reverend Hawkins Clark. Hawkins had attended this congregation and came out of this congregation when he entered into ministry 2 years after I was born. I met him when I was 16. I grew up in a little country church, one of four churches on a charge in Montgomery County, and one of the other members of my MYF, we were not UM then, we were just M, put my name forward at a meeting I had never attended to be the sub-district president. And to show you what poor judgment they had, they elected me sight unseen. And I didn't even know what a subdistrict was. But as a part of that, you went to meetings, of course. That's what we Methodists do. We go to meetings. And there was a young preacher serving in Waverly named Hawkins Clark. And that's when I met the man whose life I helped to celebrate yesterday. As I got to know him, he and Jerry Hilton, my pastor at the time, were the first two people ever to say to me, "Did you ever think you might have the gifts to serve in ordained ministry?" Actually, going out after first service, someone said, "Hate to burst your bubble, but he said that to me as well." He probably said that to everybody, quite frankly. It's okay. It's all right. Because that's who Hawkins was. He was a constant presence of encouragement in my life, and I think in a lot of other people's lives. He's about this tall. He took his Hawkins box with him wherever he served because he had to stand on a box to see over the pulpit. He had a great smile that would just fill the room. He had a wonderful, welcoming spirit. As I did indeed follow this path into serving churches, every annual conference he would ask me how I was doing, where I was, how I was doing. He would say he was proud of me. Ordinary things. He didn't serve large membership churches. Although Tulip Street had been a large membership church, it was not when he was there serving. But he served faithfully throughout those years, and for me and for many others, was a constant presence of encouragement, constantly sharing that love of God in the best way that he could. I've heard it attributed to several people, but I first heard this attributed to Mother Teresa, who said, "We are not asked to do extraordinary things, but ordinary things with great love." I would just adapt that a little bit, because I ain't no Mother Teresa. I would say we are not called to do extraordinary things, but we are called to do ordinary things with as much love as we can muster at the time. Because our love is so far short of God's great love. But we just muster all the love that we can to do those ordinary, ordinary things like breaking bread, sharing a meal, which we're going to do just a little bit later. Not to get praise. At the end of it, we say we're just doing what we were supposed to do, right? When I saw Hawkins last several weeks ago, the same smiling presence. He was very ill at the time, but he had a good morning that morning. He was telling me how proud he was of me. He was asking how things were going at West End, that he was sure they were going great. Always that wonderful presence. And then in the days before his death, he was offering grief counseling to his family in terms of what they would do after he was gone, telling them how much he loved them, how proud he was of each of them, and how he knew things were going to be great for them. Ordinary things with a pretty good amount of love attached. The person I shared the service with yesterday was the Reverend Joe Shelton. Known Joe for many, many years. He is officially a retired clergy member of the conference, but he is serving at Tulip Street for this time just before their closing. He was going from that service to a continuation of the service for Coach Ed Temple. He had been a student, Joe had been a student at TSU, had taken a couple of Coach Temple's courses. He said he was a great teacher in addition to being a great coach. I spoke about Coach Temple a few months back. Used to see him at Wendell Smith's when we would go there for breakfast. To look across the way and see Coach Temple, you might think, this is just somebody's grandfather, you know? Which he was. But he was also the most successful Olympic coach in women's track in history. But the thing he was proudest of was not the number of Olympic medals that his runners had won. He was proudest of the fact that every single one had graduated, and some had gone on to do additional graduate work. Ordinary things that every student does. But he knew that that was the most important thing for their lives. And apparently that got communicated to them, because Joe was telling me that when he arrived on the TSU campus, scared to death, not sure if he should be there, not sure if he was going to make it in college, he was standing there near the tiger, their mascot that was presented there, and he said an attractive young woman came up to him and said, "You're new here, aren't you? I want to welcome you to TSU." Tried to make him feel at home, tried to put him at ease. Her name was Wilma Rudolph. She happened to come from my hometown, one of the fastest runners in the world. And yet, when it came to welcoming a new student, an ordinary thing, she knew what was important. Perhaps she knew that before she came and ran as a Tiger Bell. Or perhaps she learned that, or at least had it confirmed by Coach Ed Temple. We're gathered to do some ordinary things today. In a few minutes, we're going to break a variety of kinds of bread, and people around the world will be doing that with us. We're going to be sharing juice, and others will be sharing wine around the world in different traditions. And we're going to be telling the same story in different words, in different languages, in different places. But it's going to be a very ordinary thing, simply breaking bread. But there is no greater love communicated through any act than this act. I have a storytelling friend named Ed Stuyvesant. I met Ed back in 1979 when he was doing a shtick called Brother Ed from the Church of Partyology. He's a wonderful storyteller. He was raised in a family with one Catholic parent, one Baptist parent. He was raised Catholic. In fact, wrote a book called Raised Catholic, Can You Tell? Thought he might be a priest at one time, even studied for the priesthood, but that was not really his calling. He traveled around the country telling stories and for a number of years taught in Catholic schools. We were at a gathering where we were both going to be leaders of storytelling workshops. There were other folks there, dancers, mimes, jugglers, etc. And we were all kind of introducing ourselves. We were saying what it was we had been doing, where we'd been telling, where we'd been leading workshops. Eb got called away from this leadership meeting, And as he was leaving, the person convening it said, "Ed, tell us what you've been doing." He said, "You know, the same old thing, eating his body, drinking his blood," and he left. Now, if you didn't know Ed, you might think he was being flip or irreverent. He was being very reverent. He told us the most important thing that he had been doing with his life, eating his body and drinking his blood. It's the same old thing we all do. We do it weekly or we do it monthly, depending on our tradition. It's that ordinary thing done to communicate God's great love. So maybe it's not the sensational things that the disciples seem to be asking about. Maybe it's not a five-step program to increasing your faith. Maybe it's just doing what we're supposed to be doing. And at the end of it, saying it's no big deal. We were just doing what we were supposed to do. I'm praying that as we do what we're supposed to do today, as you come, as you receive bread, as you receive the cup, these ordinary things of life, that the great love that will be communicated through them, our small love and God's great love, will be something you can carry with you into the ordinary things that you do in the world. Because if you want to increase your faith, I think Jesus just told us how. Thanks be to God.